Hello, and welcome to Studio Sessions, the big red and shiny podcast where we talk with artists about the ideas, inspiration, and processes that go into creating their work. I'm your host, Matt Kuhlman, and our guest this episode is Chris DiPietro. Chris is a 2007 graduate from the Maryland Institute College of Art with a degree in painting and printmaking. Primarily a painter, Chris's pieces move through various stages of using a mix of imagery and text. These include references to classic writers and artists such as Herman Melville and Duchamp. In his most recent series, his paintings have become more minimal, featuring geometric arrangements of dots superimposed upon paintings of taxidermied birds, and sometimes these patterns stand alone on flat fields of color. Join me as he explains the direction he is heading in his most recent muse. Hi Chris, how are you doing today?
Good.
Thanks for being here.
Sure.
And so, we're just here to talk a little bit about your work. Where would you like to start? Because you said you have a more recent body of work that we're looking at here.
Yeah, the newest work is are these bird paintings that I've been doing, and they're all sort of centered around the pigeon, which was the first bird painting that I decided to do. Mm-hmm. And actually, it was this one over here with the three sort of blocks that go through the center.
Okay.
And the idea started from working with comets, actually. I had images of comets, and then I got interested in pigeons, sort of.
How do you make that jump from comets to pigeons?
Well, it was kind of, at first, a little, like, intuitive, and I just sort of jumped to the next thing, which is kind of how my work usually goes. I'll just have I work with a certain subject matter until it stops, and usually towards the end of that, like, something else just starts coming in, and I don't really question it too much at the beginning because I don't want to cut anything off. But I started thinking about this idea of the homing pigeon, or these pigeons that have, like, really good homing capabilities. So they come around, they come back around again, and the comet's sort of another metaphor for that, and
yeah,
that's
like a comet.
Yeah, exactly. Like that, you know, every 250 years or whatever, like Halley's comet comes back around.
So these dots that we're seeing on top, imposed on top of the birds, are these coming from the comets and kind of celestial objects you were working with before?
Well, slightly different, because the one that the sort of symbols started with was the passenger pigeon. And I've been interested in the sort of story of the passenger pigeon ever since I heard about it.
I coincidentally just read about it, like, 2 days ago.
Right.
I'd heard of it before, but then I read it again recently, like,
yeah,
2 days ago in the book, The World Without Us. You've ever heard of it?
Yeah,
yeah.
I have heard of that. I think it's held up sort of as a prime example of extinction and a species going out of control and sort of how it's affected by us. But I went to the Natural History Museum at Harvard, and they had a great specimen, so it just really kicked off the bird thing in a different direction. Still a pigeon, but a different one. And then it sort of took on this sort of pseudo-religious idea. The idea of, like, the icon, or, like, even, like, a martyr figure, something like that. And the dots in this one are arranged to either resemble sort of either a bullseye or a targeting system, or a sort of, like, mystical, like, halo effect, like rays coming out from the middle.
So it could be going in or coming out depending on your viewpoint.
Yeah, yeah. But either way, it centers the importance on the creature. And I just wanted to sort of, like, have it stand as an icon. And it relates actually to these two, which I think I did these at the end of last summer, and these are based off of Velázquez, the Annunciation painting, I think it is, where the Virgin Mary is in the center, and you get this, like, halo of stars.
Okay, but in this example that you've painted here, it's just the halo and
exactly
nothing else.
Yeah, I thought it would be interesting to remove the deity from the situation and really just leave that graphic representation, or the graphic, like, accoutrements that accompany all these religious paintings. But not go too far with it. You know, I'm not about to put gold leaf all over things. Like, just take like what the form is, and leave that sort of in a pure sense.
Mm-hmm. Is working with kind of, I guess, religious iconography something that you've often done, or is this a new venture?
Yeah, it's new, but I feel like the sort of, I think if you're really like working with painting and you've been working for it for a while, and also if you're like a Catholic like I am, and I don't really go to church anymore at all, but I think it's something to confront. You know, you have this huge history of Western art that is religion based and you know, Catholicism based, and so there's all these like structures, compositions, and things we come to take for granted that come out of that. And I think I kind of realized like that was in the back of my mind too, like maybe it's time to confront some of these things and find some source material there.
Are you more interested in just kind of using the archetypal traditions from those imagery, or cause I don't think it's really for or against religious imagery in what you're doing. It's pretty neutral.
Yeah, it is neutral, and it doesn't
seem like you're really angry about church.
No, curious about it either. Yeah, it doesn't come from that. I think it's just an interest. One, on like a cultural level, but secondly, as a painter, I've always depicted space that you feel like you can believe in, and then do these sort of graphic things on top that deny that space, or just mess with it in some way. So like, you know, with the bluebird and double halos, there's two halos, and the one in the back is a little smaller, but it's that's because it lands behind the bird, whereas the one in the front is in front of him, and then there's sort of like they share one of those stars, and then one is missing, one is behind him. So it's like playing with the space in sort of a clever way. I hope not too clever, but just enough to like. And I find that when you do that, it really sets off the illusion or the naturalism you're trying to achieve, because you have this like you have this foil against it. So I'm always looking for reasons to play with that. And now, sort of, these two modes are kind of like marrying each other in a really nice way. And the last one I did was this black pigeon, which is borrowing sort of the bullseye shape again, which I also see as the flat halo. Like if you look at a lot of like Fra Angelico paintings,
yeah, they have like a golden disc behind.
Exactly, like the sort of halos that I'm talking about. That just seem like objects. They're these objects that are just glued to the back of their heads, kind of. And the more you look at it, the more strange it seems, like, if you really think about it, you know, or just take it for what it is. So I'm borrowing from that shape, and again, still the bullseye, so there's this idea of, like, targeting nature, but playing with the space. So you have this black enamel paint, which goes around the bird, overlaps it, the one in the back goes behind it, and then the one on top sits right on top of the bird. So there's
that's
all these
kind
ways
of weaving through the figure itself.
Yeah, exactly. And I usually start these paintings with the bird form, and I just concentrate on making a painting that sits well in space, and like an illusion you can start to believe in. And then I start to mess with it. And then I usually go back in to try to, if I need to fix anything, or if it's too far in one direction, that kind of thing. And especially with this one, I work in diptychs quite often, because I think it's fun to like present two ideas at once on separate panels. Just sort of widens that narrative scope that you can get.
Is there any reason that you don't do triptychs? Because that's kind of a religious.
Yeah. Well, I did one up here. That was one of the earlier pigeon ones. So there's pigeon, sort of abstract shape form in the middle, and then another pigeon that's the same one really, but just a little closer. And again, talking about the arc, like half circle, sort of return, and things like that. So I have wrestled with triptychs. I find that I'm more comfortable with the diptych format right now, just because it's so pared down. Like there's this and that, and they're right next to each other.
Yeah. There's plenty of dualities in religious icons.
Yeah,
like good and evil.
Sure.
Why not?
Yeah, and that's another thing with this pigeon. It's called black pigeon because the pigeon over here is black, and then the enamel is black. But on the other side, we just have a completely pure geometric form.
So that painting on the right is also in its finished state? It looks like a sketch out of the halo of the other one without the bird.
Yeah, exactly. I like to, every now and then, I'll just leave geometry be and have it have it stand in for itself and see how that talks to the images. And they're all equally important. But the other thing that I've been doing is playing with this enamel paint and oils. So the oils are sort of the naturalistic side of things and the, and the type of paint that you can manipulate and show that. But then enamel paint, the sign painter's stuff, is like super glossy, super just chemical. You can't even leave the can open for very long because it makes you dizzy. Like, it's just this kind of other thing, right?
Yeah, it does achieve a very different effect, especially in the one where you're using a large portion of enamel in the center of that bullseye there. You can really see the juxtaposition between the materials.
Yeah, against matte and shiny, and I guess the in service of the content, I think of the enamel as like the pure or like the more like heightened symbol kind of material, whereas the oil paint is like, that's like your dirt, that's your that's your ground. So I've been playing with the materials in a different way too. Something I didn't really think about too much beforehand.
And you're using a lot of heavily symbolic imagery. What kind of a relationship to the natural world do you want your work to convey to the viewer?
Well, I think no matter what the actual subject is, I mean, I'm painting birds right now, and it's the first time I painted birds. Back in school, I did a whole series on bird houses and bird-like architecture with these cages and sort of still lives. So
bird subject is something you've been working with for several
years?
Yeah,
but not like head-on like actual birds. I've always sort of danced around it. And so doing that now, I've come to realize it doesn't quite matter, because what I want in naturalistic painting is a sense of light, and it just keeps coming back to that. As being the most important thing. Like, if you have a nice, believable light, your form takes shape. And after that, it doesn't quite matter what it is. Like, I've done these figurative paintings, too. And I've kind of done figurative and then still life and that kind of thing for a long time. So it's not quite about the natural world, but light, if anything, would be the most important thing. Like, a sense of light, rounded objects. I'm that kind of painter. I like that challenge.
I guess what's your own understanding of the natural world then? Just because I noticed that you use like comets and things, like celestial things, and then birds, and just kind of what's your draw to nature as a subject?
Well, I think I like the sort of grandness of those big ideas, and like oceans and comets and things like that are just like super universal and like kind of amazing to think about, just to think about. But then I also kind of think that there's some really interesting things that happened in more humble parts of nature, like the pigeons, and just reading up on pigeons and stuff and how they're so related to doves, and doves are like this exalted form, but pigeon is like commonly the cultural low, right?
I didn't
like,
know they were that closely related.
Yeah, it's really similar in terms of the species, but like
you could either be a winged rat or a messenger of peace.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, flaming dove or whatever. So I think it's places where poetic possibilities just pop out at you. I've found to be interesting.
What are some of the other bird forms that you're using? Because you mentioned that there's a bluebird in one, and obviously the pigeons. Are there any others that you're drawn to?
Thinking about, not right now. Well, there is the. This is a warbler, a small one. You can hold it if you want. And then I did this one too. It's a yellow warbler. And again, the yellow warbler took it in a different direction. I wanted this sort of like ghost image behind him. So you play around with pushing the paint in a way that makes this like echo So this painting is called Warbler Echo. And then having sort of ghost image, this sort of like, I don't know, I was thinking about like Holy Spirit kind of a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then the geometry is different. It's actually four circles in the cross shape, or even just like a symmetrical cross. And then the circles are repeated from the center.
Mm-hmm.
So from the center, they're sort of smaller, so that you get this like almost 3D effect that like this thing is like jumping out at you.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least that's what I'd like to have captured. So the circles in the back are smaller, they sit back, but everything is on top of the warblers coming out from center. I like to play with the center of paintings. I think it's an interesting challenge. It's hard to make it work.
Mm-hmm. Isn't that one of the first things they teach you, is don't put
yeah.
the subject right in the middle
yeah.
of the
I think I missed
image.
I just missed that part.
You were absent that day.
I always like that. And then using squares, I find squares to be really a great kind of challenge as well.
Mm. Are there any sources that you read or look at that kind of inform that type of aesthetic that you're going for, other than the religious iconography that you
mm-hmm.
were using?
Mm-hmm. Well, as far as influences, I really like Antonio Lopez Garcia in terms of that light we're talking about. I think he was probably the best, and there was a show at the MFA when I first moved here that was really amazing.
Mm-hmm.
So seeing that work, I've been thinking about this Carol Fabricius painting of a bird. I used to have a postcard of it. I was trying to find it, but I need to look up his stuff again. It's sort of like the warbler painting, where there's just a bird like perched on the side of like a wall, and everything's kind of flat.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Fra Angelico I keep thinking about, but a lot of times, honestly, like with the graphic stuff that happens on my paintings, I'm kind of taking from design sources,
mm-hmm.
And almost like typographical layouts and things like that. Like I find a lot of inspiration in that kind of printed matter too.
Mm-hmm.
So stuff that's not painting, but can interact with painting through in a really nice
mm-hmm.
way.
And moving forward, this kind of work, how do you see the subject developing? Do you think it might remain very iconographic like this, where it's very recognizable, realistic
mm-hmm.
forms, or do you think you might introduce new elements? Like, you're mentioning type, like,
mm-hmm.
might we see, like, type come into the play, or...
Yeah, and I've played with text before, with some of the older works, like this one,
okay.
which is from a couple summers ago at this point.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the type thing was challenging, because
it
has
to
be
hand done. So.
Yeah, it's hand done first of all, so that's a challenge.
Mm-hmm.
But it kind of adds a whole different element. You have like this statement. And that's another thing that just comes into someone's mind, and they bring their associations to those words.
Mm-hmm.
And so word against image is really, really interesting. But I only feel like I like skimmed it with the work I've done so far, and then I took
mm-hmm.
a step back and I went back to geometric forms. So I don't know if the type will come back. I think what I took from using type and letters and words was kind of like a strength of purpose and directing the content.
Mm-hmm.
But at this point, I kind of wanted to take a step back and just concentrate on geometry and images for a little bit.
Yeah, I noticed it has kind of the same effect as what you're doing with the halos of dots.
Yes.
Right now.
Yes.
Very pale,
mm-hmm.
thin line letters
yeah.
over the image.
And again, it plays with that space.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm very forthright about the fact that I love to play with space in paintings. So any excuse I can find to do it,
mm-hmm.
I'll explore that, you know, and see where it takes me. But I think I do have a couple more bird paintings to do. I haven't stretched anything yet, but the series is not over, really. And then I kind of want to pursue some figurative stuff, like this one, these sort of double image things where there's sort of overlapping light problems and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's where it's headed. And again, it's just playing with this material and letting that sort of
mm-hmm.
direct the content a little bit.
How do you think you might be interested in using the figure in your future works, or have you really thought about it yet?
I think just really robust painting might be in the mix there.
Mm-hmm.
I returned to painting with palette knife, and I did that all throughout school. I know this seems like talking about like such antiquated things, but for
mm-hmm.
painters it really matters. And the brush, kind of, I would get obsessed with like making brush strokes blend and all this stuff. But with palette knife, it's really like building. It's building, so
mm-hmm.
you can like leave little pieces, and then pieces connect, and you get this color patch system, kind of like Cezanne and Uniqlo and things like that, where it's just color against color. And I think that's like a better way to build a form, or
mm-hmm.
at least personally for me. So I started working on canvas again, and that really lends itself to palette knife.
Mm-hmm. Do you know if Cezanne used palette knife largely, or
I think a lot of it was brushy, but he obviously, you know, sort of would leave things alone. But it was something I couldn't do with brushes. I would find.
I know
myself,
he worked on pieces over a period of years,
yeah.
year or something, right?
So yeah, yeah.
If you give it that much time, it'll dry. You can paint over it.
Yeah, that's true. But yeah, I think the palette knife thing really made a difference. So that's what I mean by robust paintings.
Mm-hmm.
Like really trying to push that light, really trying to make it believable, make it an illusion.
Mm-hmm.
Again, is going to be important.
Or I guess like the figure is a very present form in art. How would you feel like you would want to approach it to try to make it your own vision of what the human figure is?
That's a good question. It'll be about geometry, and even in these two examples here, you see there are parts that I leave to I just leave there, and it's color moments and things like that that like butt up against a form that you can believe.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really this idea of like letting certain parts of paint like be paint, and I always think that makes the illusion a little stronger
mm-hmm.
because you have a foil against it.
Is that something Clem Greenberg said?
Is
let
it?
Paint be paint, surface be surface.
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's like that idea, but I also like
mm-hmm.
the illusion of it. You know, paint has this wonderful capability of doing that and representing flesh.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you know, another artist that I saw that really is influencing my work right now is Jenny Seville. And I looked at the paintings in books, but I saw her work in the fall at the Gagosian, and it was just like totally kickstarted me. And she's one of those artists who does that, lets parts of the painting be like be paint and everything, and then right next to something that just describes like a hand or like an ankle or a neck or a shoulder like so well.
Mm-hmm.
And there's just such strong imagery in that.
Mm-hmm. And it's interesting that you mentioned being drawn to dualities
mm-hmm.
earlier, because in your recent works where you've got these dots, series of geometric shapes combined with bird imagery, I can really see it kind of bridging a gap between like kind of more traditional ways of working and
mm-hmm.
traditional modes of thinking and a newer aesthetic, just with the addition of these few dots. And I guess an interesting question would be, where do you kind of view this type of work as fitting into the art world as a whole?
Oh.
On the scale of like very traditional to very modern, like experimental.
I think my work is still pretty traditional. I think just the difference is that I like to leave my geometry on the top. I like to have it show. I like
mm-hmm.
to not hide it too much. And sometimes in a lot of paintings, of course, like all this geometry has always been there, and especially those religious paintings, you have those cross paintings and this sort of like triangle thing, but it's built into the painting, it's built in under the structure
mm-hmm.
and it makes that illusion doubly beautiful. I like to leave it on the top, and I like to call attention to it
mm-hmm.
For better or for worse. And I saw a lot of paintings. I was just in Chicago at the Art Institute. I was lucky to see a bunch of Christopher Wool paintings, and that really like caught my eye, because he's another artist who is doing a lot of graphic stuff and then messy paint too, and shiny like black paint, and I was just really, I thought that was pretty cutting edge painting
mm-hmm.
to me, because it is this sort of overall aesthetic thing that's happening.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a little more narrow with what I choose to paint, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Try not to get too distracted.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you don't have any of them out, but you're referencing comment paintings before, and
mm-hmm.
can you kind of describe what those were looking like? Was there strong geometric
sure.
presence to it?
Yeah, there's a really tiny one over there. It's a watercolor.
Okay, very tiny. It's about
yeah.
an inch by an inch.
Yes. It's the smallest painting I've done. It was really important. Again, I was playing with a double image kind of a thing to give like a sense of almost like a film strip or something. You know, the comet being very small on the bottom and then the top one being a little bit bigger. So there's this sort of, again, like a sense of time or it coming back. That was the first one I did. And then in the other room, I'll show it to you, there's two more. Another diptych where the same thing is happening, where a comet is like a little bit to the lower left hand, and then the one on the left or right side is a little higher up.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, it was kind of about, well, playing with that space, because it's very flat space, you know, the sort of like blackness and regulating all those blacks.
Mm-hmm.
But then having like this sort of sense of time lapse kind of thing. And there are some geometric interventions that happen with that too, that call to like photography or like a frame
mm-hmm.
kind of a thing. But yeah, and then placing it with the pigeon paintings, just having a pigeon stuck in the middle of like deep space.
Is that kind of a transition piece?
That is a transition piece. I still don't think it's quite what I was hoping for, so I might
mm-hmm.
try that again. But yeah, that's kind of the idea there.
Mm. I noticed you have a framed handwritten letter here. Is that a piece that you made, or is that...
That's, it's actually...
Is that just an inspirational
yeah, yeah,
thing
it's,
for yourself?
A letter that a teacher of mine, Carl Connolly at MICA, sent to me after a crit, actually.
Mm.
And it always stuck in my mind. It's funny how, like, you have these teachers... or people that have taught you about painting, and they're always kind of there in the studio with you, whether you like it or not, if they made any difference, at least. And I have, like, this cast of characters that are still, you know, up there
mm-hmm.
when I'm working, so I kind of thought it would make sense to get that letter out and read it again. And he just wrote some really solid advice, and I just kind of like to look at it every now and then. Just
mm-hmm. What are some of the things that he says to do?
Well, the best one
I can see
is
a lot of do nots.
Yeah, yeah. Most of them are do nots. That was kind of his style. But
uh-huh.
do not make other people's work, which I think is important to remember. It's one thing to get influenced by things, but you know, you should know your limits. And
you don't want to be too much of a copyist.
Yeah, you don't. Yeah, and I don't want to make genre paintings. I don't do genre exercises either.
Mm-hmm.
So do not intentionally scuttle your own success. That seems obvious.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Do not sit around waiting for the next painting before trying to move professionally. Show the work. That helps, because, you know,
mm-hmm.
you should be showing. And beware of your intellect. At times it will steer you wrong. That's another great one. Like,
yeah,
because I've been up against that before, where you're making a painting and you kind of think, does this belong in like the content? But sometimes it doesn't matter. Just be intuitive about it.
Mm-hmm. I think you're a unique artist out of who I've talked to so far, because I don't talk to a whole lot of pure painters. I talk to a
mm-hmm.
couple, but in Boston particularly, it seems like people kind of branch out into a lot of different areas. Do you
yeah.
ever find it tempting to kind of expand the way you're working and you pull back from that because you're drawn to something about painting? Or how does that,
yeah.
how do other medium play against
I think,
what you're doing?
I look at a ton of different artists, and I really appreciate when artists work in different modes. I think it's like fascinating just to see that. I personally can't really.
Mm-hmm.
I think I'm just most interested in moving paint around and manipulating space. That's
mm-hmm.
what I like to do. I like to make nice paintings that do that, you know,
yeah.
And pursue ideas through painting. And here and there, I've kind of widen my vocabulary a little bit because of what I'm looking at, but I don't have any intention to make sculptures. I don't want to make videos. I don't want
mm-hmm.
to do any of that. I really do like painting, and that's what works for me. But yeah, it is kind of a pretty interdisciplinary scene, and a lot of grad schools really push that,
mm-hmm.
Which I think is nice, but sometimes that work looks really distracted too. I've seen examples of it where it just is so all over the place and too ADD for me. You know, there's a lot of...
It's an ADD audience these days.
Yeah, no, and media saturation is something to think about, too. Mm. I think painting is a good antidote to that because it's so old. So, I don't know.
Yeah, I guess it is the traditional of the traditional. I'm a printmaker myself,
mm-hmm.
so there's a lot of heavy tradition-laid process
yeah.
that goes along with that, but
yeah.
even since I've graduated from getting my BFA, like,
mm-hmm.
not having a studio to do that stuff in, I've reverted to being a mixed-media artist because I just can't make prints.
Yeah, yeah.
I really don't have an interest in editioning anymore.
No.
By the time I was done, I was doing a lot of monoprinting, where I was using the print as a method of making an image and using that style, but
okay.
it was a one-off, so...
Yeah, printmaking is another one that I did that in school a lot. I do miss it because it was really fun, especially etching. But printmaking it's a whole different thing. You can really combine a lot of different methods nowadays too.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Oh, were there any other pieces that we haven't touched on that you'd like to talk about, or any bodies of work not present that inform what we're seeing here?
No, not really. I think this is the newest and some of the better work that I've been doing, so it just feels right. I've done the this bullseye form that's in Black Pigeon. I did with a painting of drums. There were these bright red sort of pop art kind of like.
I remember seeing that. Would you like to talk a little bit about what you were doing with? Because that's introducing
yeah.
like an actual. Imagery into
yep.
the piece.
It did a different thing. Again, it played with space a lot. But I had these paintings of drums that are floating sort of more or less in a landscape. And the idea was kind of just about visual excitement in some ways. I just was really attached to these like bright, like juicy reds and
mm.
big
yeah, they're very vibrant colors compared to
yeah.
the more muted tones you're using with
yeah,
birds.
Super bright, very poppy again.
Mm.
But like the bullseye in this one, this is actually called paradiddle, which is a drum rudiment. But was the idea of like a sound and how we like how these graphic things could like stand in for a sound, right? So
mm-hmm.
there's like a like concentric outgoing circle
mm-hmm.
kind of a thing. So it's less a bullseye, but it still functions like that. I think it's hard to get away from
mm.
that sort of idea. But it was about sound. So again, like it's funny to kind of trace these sort of inclinations and see how it remains in the work or changes in the work.
Mm-hmm.
And I think like if I use it differently now, it doesn't really discount what I said about it before, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think it just, it can change. So that was a really important painting for me,
mm-hmm.
In terms of the last body of work, at least. Which
for some reason, that one particularly makes me recall Jasper John's
yeah.
use of the bullseye form.
Yeah, yeah. I looked at some of those when I was doing it, so as to avoid some of those really
make sure you're not copying
yeah.
them too hard.
To avoid that, but also like to borrow from it. I think I like pop art a lot.
Mm-hmm.
The Roy Lichtenstein show is really cool at the Art Institute of Chicago
mm-hmm.
right now. Although his early paintings are the best parts, is the later paintings are just bonkers. They're totally crazy.
I guess an interesting thing about painting, like your teacher mentioned that don't make other people's work. Since it is such a long-running tradition,
mm-hmm.
How hard is it to avoid unintentionally even, like, repeating somebody else's work? Because there's just so much of it out there.
Yeah. Like, well, unintentionally, I think it's, well, what can you do, really, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But as far as influences and paintings that inspire you and stuff, I kind of can tell when I'm doing that too much, and
mm.
those paintings don't tend to survive very
yeah.
long.
Do you physically destroy them?
No, I don't like, you know, it's not like burning my paintings. I just
yeah.
like, I'll just wipe them down. Like,
uh-huh.
and a lot of times when I'm starting a painting and I don't have a body of work that I'm pursuing, or like a general thought of what I'm doing. That's how I start with ideas, is sort of like you just grab onto whatever you can think of,
mm-hmm.
and just start the process. And a lot of paintings happen that you just, you know, you actually just paint them and you sit there and you're like, okay, well, that's not me, or that's like an experiment, and now I can just get rid of it,
mm-hmm.
and scrape the paint off and start over.
Process wise, when you're working, is most of what you produce done on the canvas directly, or is there a lot of preliminary sketching?
Preliminary stuff, I actually don't draw much anymore, although I've been thinking about trying to get back into just pure drawing.
Neither do I. It takes too long.
Yeah.
I used to have a lot of free time, now I don't.
Yeah, it's weird. I kind of like to keep the space clean and not with, like, I don't want to mess with charcoal. But anyway,
mm-hmm.
I do a lot of studies on computer now. I use InDesign,
okay.
and Photoshop, and I'll usually just grab some of my source material, things that I've photographed before, and start playing around with them,
mm-hmm.
Putting big color blocks. I'm not precious with Photoshop. I don't really use it well. I just
mm-hmm.
use it to like make a study.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the geometry you're seeing, I got to play around with that in there before, just to make sure it was going to work. And also because I need to plan it out, because
mm-hmm.
that stuff is precise. And when I do the enamel parts and the geometry, I have to lay it all out and really think about, like, plot it. So it really is helpful to use Photoshop.
Mm-hmm. That's an interesting method of coming up with compositions and stuff. I don't know if I've ever heard anyone doing that.
Yeah, it's definitely stretched my work a bit. You know,
mm-hmm.
I find that I'm like less, I'm less like worried about making a mistake if I can play around with it just visually first and see what it would be like. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I'll do paintings, take a picture of the painting, pull that into Photoshop, and start putting color blocks, or, you know, manipulating lines or whatever, just
mm-hmm.
to see what might happen.
Yeah, it probably saves a little bit of time from trying something out and be like, oh, it didn't work, I'll scrape it out and do it.
Yeah,
again.
Yeah. Although there's something to
be
said.
Get a thumbnail of what you're thinking.
Yeah. There is something to be said about that too. So I try not to. It's all just a balance. I don't know. There's so many rules you make for yourself when you're painting, and it's sometimes they're silly. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's about all the time we got.
Yeah.
So thanks for talking with me.
Cool. No problem.
Good to meet you.
Thanks.
Thanks a lot.
Yep.
That concludes this episode of Studio Sessions with our guest Chris DiPietro. You can find his work online at ChristopherDiPietro.com. You can learn more about me at my website, MattCoolman.com. And if you'd like to support this program, you can send a donation through PayPal to StudioSessionsPodcast@gmail.com. Even if you only send $1, your donation helps guarantee that I can continue providing interviews with interesting artists for your listening pleasure. And of course, don't forget to visit BigRedAndShiny.com for future episodes, along with other high-quality arts and culture content. Thank you for listening, and see you next time on Studio Sessions.